And we're holding on some Chdalet Omid Beis, the first line, the wide lines. Now, we were learning yesterday all about Moilach and the whole ritual of it, where we said that, according to some Rishonim, where we discussed it involves going between two fires. According to some Rishonim, it doesn't involve burning the child, just having them walk between two fires or jump over a fire. According to other Rishonim, it does involve that the child actually gets burnt. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yosi bar Rav Chanina, Sholosh Krisis b'Avodah Zarah Lama. Why does it say three times in the Torah Kodesh in connection with Avodah Zarah? Two in connection with Moilach in Parshas Kedoshim, when it tells so in Parshas Achrim, it mentions briefly, Omi Zarah Cholos Sitin Lahavil Moilach, don't give your children to be passed through from Moilach, which we analyzed that pasuk yesterday. In Parshas Kedoshim, it mentions Kodesh for it twice. A few psukim apart, and then you have in Parshas Shlach where it mentions that a person gets kodesh for avodah zarah in general. Now Rashi points out, we learned yesterday that moilach is not necessarily avodah zarah, but still in a looser sense we can call it avodah zarah. So we have to understand then why it's saying three times kodesh in this connection. Even if we say that Moilach is not Avodah Zarah, but still we can still learn. Still, the Gemara is going to be using one of these three times Kodesh that it says to teach us the concept of Shaloi Kedarka, where he does a worship of Moilach not in the usual way. So therefore, so in a general sense, we can call it under the general heading of Avodah Zarah. So why does it say three times? Achas for Kedarka, one teaches us where he does it the normal way, that he passes his child through the fires, and we're talking about Kodesh would be if there's no Edim Vasra. If there was Edim Vasra, he'd be getting Skila, which is why it's in this parak. Another one teaches us if it's Shaloi Kedarka, namely if he does one of the four Avoidus that we learned a few Dafim ago, if he does one of those four Avoidus for Moilach. So since you have this extra Moilach, so it's one of these things. So since we don't need it to tell us if he does the ritual with passing the child between the fires, because we already know that from the earlier pasuk, then we can use it for Shaloi Kedarka, where he does some other kind of worship for Moilach, with shechting a korban or burning it, etc. So that's two. V'achas from Moilach and one from Moilach itself. So in other words, even though it's normal to worship it this way, you still have to write it separately, precisely because Moilach is not a regular Avodah Zarah. Okay, so that covers the three of them. So again, one of them is where he worships regular Avodah Zarah, Kedarka. He worships some other Avodah Zarah, which is normally worshipped in some other way, such as Pa'ur or Miraculous or what have you, Kedarka. Another one, Shaloi Kedarka, where he does one of the four Avodahs for some other Avodah Zarah. So we've learned earlier in the parak that he's Chayav Misa for it. How do we know that? He's Chayav Kodesh. For that, we need the second Kodesh. And the third one is for Moilach specifically. Well, the Gemara says, "Lamanda Amar Moilach Avodah Zarah." According to the opinion that we said on Amar Aleph, that Moilach itself is a regular Avodah Zarah, Kores v'Moilach Lamali. Then, according to that, why do we need to mention Kores separately by Moilach? It's no different in that regard than any other Avodah Zarah. And the answer is Lamavibnoi Shaloi Kedarka. That would teach us that he's also Chayav Kores if he does this kind of ritual with the fires for some other Avodah Zarah where it's not the normal way to worship it. So in other words, like this, we're saying if he does that to Moilach, then he's Chayav Kores. How would we know? If he just did it, set up the same kind of thing with the brick platform and the fires on both sides of it, like Abaya described, or jumping over a fire, like Rava described, how would we know that he'd be Chayav for such a thing for some other Avodah Zarah as well? So this Mavib Noi, even though it's not normal to do it for some other Avodah Zarah, nevertheless, it's a special thing that he'd be chayev that he'd be chayev for that anyway. So that's what the third, that he's chayev kores for the third thing. Now, Tosfos points out, in other words, that like this, we wouldn't have said that it applies to any other Avodah Zarah, since it's in connection with Moloch, but since we have other psukim about Moloch, then we're using it for in Ladaka, in Inyan Lakan, that we're reusing it for something else differently, in other words. Because, in other words, the idea is, after all, we'd have to ask. I mean, we have the four avoidus. Where do we get the idea that we should, in effect, be adding a fifth one to be saying for going through the fire, so therefore we need to be told separately, fine, he may not be chayiv misa, but misa's based in for setting up this thing with the fires and doing his child with that, with any other avodah zarah other than Moloch. But nevertheless, if he'd be chayiv kares, that we can learn from this pasuk. So the Gemara says, now, how about, here's another way, though. One of those three kores that it says is in connection, it doesn't actually say that he worships Avodah Zarah, it says he's Megadif, which, as we talked about the other day, means that he blasphemes Hashem. Now, there's two different opinions in the Gemara and Christos what that means. Does it mean worshiping Avodah Zarah? But it can also mean, instead it can mean cursing Hashem. That then he's chayiv kares if he does it without Aden Vasra. So Ulamanda Omer Megadif Lava Vodizorahi. Megadif Avodizorahi, according to the opinion that Megadif is Avodizorah. So Koris for Megadif Lomali, so then why does it need to mention why does it need to mention Koris by Megadif? Namely, in other words, so far what we had is the three choruses that we talked about are the pasuk that said that when a person tidvar Hashem boza, that he mocked the word of Hashem, that's mitzvah hefar, and he violated his mitzvah, which refers to Avodah Zarah, which is considered keneged kol atar to kola, so therefore he chorus to chorus. Now we're saying, in addition, by Megadif, it also says separately, in the pasuk before that, it says as Hashem, the person who acts high-handedly and deliberately against Hashem, as Hashem hu Megadif benichrusa, he's Megadif Hashem, and therefore he gets chorus. So according to that, we have a fourth time that it says chorus. Now, if you say Megadif if means a separate thing that he curses Hashem, then fine, you need a separate chorus for that. We already know he's chayiv misas based in. We need to also be told that he's chayiv chorus. What about according to the according to the opinion that Megadif itself is Ovid Avodah Zarah, then it means you have yet another one. So chorus for Megadif Lomali. And the answer is Lechadatanya, he would say that you need that extra chorus to teach us what it says in a braisa as follows. When it says he chorus, by Avodah Zarah, by Mesvase Hefa, which we're saying does refer to Avodah Zarah, it says the double expression he chorus. So what does that mean? He chorus for Olam Hazeh, he chorus for Olam Haba. It means that he gets chorus both in this world and the next world. He dies young, and his neshama is cut off in Olam Haba. A divrei Rabbi Akiva, that's how Rabbi Akiva learns. Omar Rabbi Shmuel, so Rabbi Shmuel says, wait a minute, Valuk Vanema, Vinichrasa, the previous pasuk also says, Vinichrasa by Megadif. So that would mean three times Kores that it says in this connection. V'chishloisha Elomim Yesh, are there three worlds? There's this world, and there's the next world. What would the third one be for? Ela, Vinichrasa ba'olam hazeh, he Kores la'olam haba. So rather, Rabbi Shmuel says the Venichrasa teaches us he's cut off in this world. The Hikores, from Hikores to Kores, the word Hikores refers to Olam Haba. Tikores, and when it says Tikores, that's just Dibur Torah, Kolashim Ne'adam, that's just the normal way of the Torah of talking. Now, Rabbi Akiva is not bothered by that because he holds that Megadif is Mevorech as Hashem, is blaspheming Hashem. So therefore he needs Tikores Tikores to tell us that a person is Chayiv Kores for worshipping Avodah Zarah. Both Rashi and Tosfos point out that given that Rabbi Shmuel knows that Rabbi Akiva says that as Hashem who Megadif refers to somebody who blasphemes Hashem rather than somebody who worships Avodah Zarah, so Rabbi Shmuel is not asking according to you, Rabbi Akiva, how are you going to learn the pasuk? He's going to say, I learned the pasuk by saying that other one is not talking about Avodah Zarah. He's just explaining himself why, given that I say that Megadif means Avodah Zarah, then why am I not bothered by the fact that there's three, and the answer is Dibur Torah Kolashim Ne'adam. So the point is, in other words, we are using all the choruses. We're having Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanina saying that one of them refers to when a person worships Avodah Zarah, Kedarka, he's Chayav Chorus for it. Another one, when he does, Shaloi Kedarka. but using one of the four avodas. Then the third one is for molech. And then if we say that molech is, if we say that molech itself is avodah zara, then it means if he does mavir bnoi shaloi kadarka, if he does this mavir bnoi for a different avodah zara, where then he's still chayav kares for it, even if not mrs. Basin. And as far as if we say Megadif Avodah Zarah, he, then we're saying Rabbi Shmuel is the one who holds Megadif Avodah Zarah, and he holds that one of those Kares is in fact not necessary, and that's just Dibur Torah for Lashon Ne'adam. Okay. Moving along, the next people that it said in the Mishnah back on Daf Nun Gimel who are Chayiv Skila, as we said, people who practice Oiv and Yidoni magic. So now let's talk about that. What is the definition of them? Baal Oiv, the definition of Baal Oiv, is a pisa and a medaba meshechiyai. That refers to a pisa, a type of kishuf, who speaks from his armpit. So what he does is he causes the spirit of the dead person to rise up and speak out of the magician's armpit, under his arm. The Gemara is going to talk about those hakoshas Zroy Yosef. He flaps or bangs his arms is in connection with that. He does a maisa to cause a noise to come out from under his armpits. The Rambam discusses in more detail that the Gemara is going to mention that there may be a skull involved. So he takes some kind of thing. He takes a skull, or he takes some other accessory like that. He brings certain kinds of ketores, and then he does various other things and says various spells and whatever. And he causes that. And then you hear a faint voice coming from under his armpit. That's the Baal Oiv. So now the Torah is telling us that a person does that is Chayav Misa. Yeah, by the way, a big machloikas, the Rambam holds that this and Yidoni and all the other kinds of magic that we're going to discuss over the next couple of blocks, the Rambam holds that those are B'chlal not actually really effective. It's all just sleight of hand and trickery, and then the reason why the Torah is asking it to us is because these are foolish things that we Jewish people should have nothing to do with. A number of other Mephoshim disagree very strongly with the Rambam on that. The Vilna Gaon in his notes on Shulchan Aruch even says the Rambam learned too much philosophy and he was led astray by that, because in reality these things do have actual power. So it's a big machlokas whether they actually have power or whether the Torah is asking them, or whether the Torah is asking them precisely because they don't have power and the Torah doesn't want us to be involved with such things. Whatever. Anyway, so that's Oiv. The Yidoni, and then when the Torah mentions Yidoni, Zamadaba Befiv. This is, he speaks with his mouth, as we're going to see in the Gemara, how he accomplishes that. He takes a bone of a creature called Yadua, and he puts it in his mouth, and he does the various other rituals, and it causes that the bone itself speaks. There's places in Chassidus, by the way, what the Yidoya is. It's some kind of creature. There's a number of different understandings of what the Yidoya is. Some say it's a kind of bird. Some say it's a creature called, in the Mishnah, Abnei Hasodah, which itself, there's some question what it is, maybe an orangutan or something. And then there's an interesting explanation in some places in Chassidus that the Yadua is the same creature from which we get the spice myrrh, which is musk in English, and it means, in other words, that so on the one hand we can use it for kedusha, as when myrrh is used as one of the spices of the Torah, and on the other hand it can be used for koichas atoma like this. Anyway, so the Mishnah says, Hareyel b'skila, that the people who actually do the oiv and yidoni themselves are chayiv skila, v'hanishol behem b'azara, somebody who consults them, somebody who goes to the magician and says, can you do oiv, can you do yidoni for me? Is Baz Hora, he's warned by the Torah. He's being over on a loises. Rashi says, because the pasuk says, Al tifnu ala oivus, don't turn to the oivus. But he's not chayiv skila for it. Meanwhile, the magician himself is the azhora for him. The punishment for him is at the end of Parashas, says at the end of Parashas Kedoshim, that it says that such a person is chayiv skila, which is why they're in the list of people who are chayiv skila in our perek. But Rashi learns that the azhora that you're not allowed to do oiv and yidoni is the pasuk says lo yimotze b'cha, there should not be found among you, and it lists various kinds of magicians. Tosfos has a problem with that, and they flip it around and say the other way around. Lo yimotze b'cha is talking about the one who consults it, and the other pasuk, al tifnu al oivus fala yidonim, refers to the magician himself. Okay, in any case, the point is that so the magician himself is going to be chayav misa for it. The one who consults it is going to be over on a lav. So the Gemara says, Mishnah. Now, so we have in our Mishnah, it mentions both Baal Oiv and Yidoni. Now we have like this at the beginning of Masechta Krisus, it starts by listing the 36 things for which a person would be chayav kares. The Mishnah lists them as 36. A few of them actually can be broken down more finely. The Rambam does that, for example, and the result is that Rambam's list actually includes 43. But in any case, the point, because for example, you have, let's say, as far as we're going to learn in a later parak of our Masechta, we're going to talk about the arayas of a man with his mother or his grandmother or whatever, so that the Mishnah kind of collapses them all into one, and that Rambam breaks them out separately. Whatever the case, the point is that you have 36 over there, and the Mishnah starts by listing Shloshim v'sheish Krisus b'Torah. So the Gemara there wonders, in Krisus, why does the Tana need to give us a number? We ourselves can count and see that it's 36. And the answer is, it tells us that if a person, most of the Masechta Krisus focuses on the Chatois that a person would bring if he did these things b'shoigig, the general rule being, any loisa said that involves Torahs, a person would bring a Chatos if he does it b'shoigig. So now, the Mishnah says the number 36 to imply that's the maximum number of Chatois that a person could possibly bring if he did all these things behelamachat. He didn't know that all these things are also, and he started doing all these things. He's Mechal Shabbos, and he worships Avodah Zarah, and he does Oiv magic, and he duplicates the recipe for the Keturahs, and so on and so forth, so he'd be chayav 36 chatois, but no more than that, because anything within those is like a tolder of it. So the point is, now, the Mishnah only says over there, Baal Oiv, it does not mention Yidoni. Unlike our Mishnah that mentions both Oiv and Yidoni. So the Gemara asks, Mishnah Hocha to Katani Baal Oiv Yidoni. Why is it in our Mishnah, or rather in the earlier Mishnah in our Perek, when it lists all the Chayve Skila, so it mentioned Baal Oiv V'Yidoni, and then our Mishnah goes and spells out what is Oiv and what is Yidoni. Or Mishnah Gabi Krisus to Katani Baal Oiv V'Shayre Yidoni. Why is it in Masechta Krisus where it lists only Oiv and does not mention Yidoni? Why not? So the answer is Rabbi Yechon and Omar, Torah Shnein Balav Echad Nemru, because the Torah says them both within one lab. The Torah says, Al Tifnu El Oiris V'El Ayid Oinim. So therefore, when it comes to a Chatas, if he did both of them, he'd be bringing only one Chatas. Now, each one individually, he'd be chayev, but the point is that since the whole point of giving the number over there is to say this is the maximum number of chatois that he could be bringing, if he were to do all the other 35 things that it says over there, plus he did oiv, plus he did yidoni, he wouldn't be bringing 37 chatois, only 36, because oiv and yidoni are both under the same, they're both under the same lav. Now, on the other hand, if a person does both of them, he'd be chayav b'mezid, he'd be chayav koris twice, but that's the fact that he's chayav separate koris doesn't mean that he's chayav separate chatois, Rashi describes in some detail over here. You have something similar, for example, you have something similar as far as, for example, misusing the Shemen, duplicating the recipe of the Shemen HaMishpah, or putting some of the original Shemen HaMishpah on his skin, which are also two of the Chayve Krisus, and therefore Chayove Chatois that I mentioned over there. And there you have two separate lavin, but you have only one koris. So if he were to do them separately in one halim, he'd be chayev two chatois. So we see that it goes according to the number of lavin. Rashi says not the number of times he's chayev koris. And therefore here it's the other way around. Even though there's a separate koris for oiv and for yidoni, but since the lav is only one, then therefore he'd be chayev only one. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan says in the Mishnah in Krisus, it doesn't mention both oiv and yidoni, only the one of them. Rish Lakish, Omar. Rish Lakish has a different explanation. Yidoni l'fisha in ben Maisa. The reason why Yidoni is not listed in the Mishnah in Krisus is because there's no Maisa over there. Even if he were to do it by himself, Rish Lakish holds, since there's no Maisa, he wouldn't bring a Chatas for it. A Chatas a person brings only if there's a Maisa involved. So, okay, Rabbi Yochanan, now let's go back to Rabbi Yochanan then, Mishnah Baal Oiv Zanokat. So then we have to ask, according to Rabbi Yochanan, fine, if in the Mishnah in Krisus has to list only one or the other of them for the reason that he said, because according to Rabbi Yochanan, if he did both of them, he'd be chayav only one chatas, then why does it mention Baal Oiv instead mention Baal Yidoni? In other words, why Davka pick Oiv and mention it? Now, you could ask Sene, and what, if it had said you'd only wouldn't ask why it says Oiv? The reason is, L'Oroch HaNer says precisely that. Rabbi Yochanan might say, precisely because Rish Lakish is saying there's no Maisa, and maybe a person shouldn't be Chayav Chatos, according to Rabbi Yochanan Fakech, it should have clearly said you'd only, and that way it would make it clear, not like Rish Lakish, that he is in fact Chayav Chatos for it. And the answer is from the Pasuk Vekra, because the Pasuk starts by mentioning Oiv, it mentions first Oiv, then Yudoni, so therefore the Mishnah, since it needs to mention only one of them, it starts with the first one that is there, it starts with the first one that's there. Alright. The Gemara says, V'Resh Lakish, my time alert, Omak Rabbi Yechanan. So now, in turn, why doesn't Resh Lakish say like Rabbi Yechanan, that it's listing only Oiv, that because if he were to do both of them, Behelem Echad, he'd be Chayev one Chatos? So, whereas according to him, again, the vote was that for Yudoni, a person is not Chayev Chatos at all. Why does he have to learn that way? So the answer is Amar Rav Papa Chalukin Hein B'Misa, because Rav Papa says, Rav Shlokish says, listen, they are separate as far as Misa. When it comes to Misa, the Torah does mention separately, a person does Oiv or Yudoni Mos Yumasu. So therefore, Rav Shlokish says Fakert. It would mean that as far as a korban, it should be separate. It should be separate ones. The only reason why he'd be potter from a chatos in the case of Yidoni is because there's no maisa. So the Mishnah cannot mention Yidoni because there's no chatos. In other words, Rosh Lakish would say, if I were to learn like Rabbi Yochanan that the only reason it's listing only one of them is because he's an chayav only one chatos, no, hypothetically he would actually be chayav two chatos. And just as a practical matter, Yidoni doesn't involve a maisa, and therefore there can't be a chatos for it. So therefore he's forced to learn that in fact there would have been separate chatos for them, not like Rabbi Yochanan is saying, because they come from one lab, but there's a reason why there's no chatos by Yidoni as a side issue is because there's no maisa. V'Rav Yechanan, where's Rav Yechanan? We're answering back. Chalukah delav shmo chalukah. Rabbi Yochanan would take the view that when the Pasuk has separate lavim, then we can say that it means there's separate chatos. But when the Torah has one lav to cover both of them, and there's only one, and then there's two separate statements as far as Misa, where by Misa it says clearly, Oiv or Yidoni. Oiv or Yidoni, as opposed to by the lav, it says with a vav. So Rabbi Yochanan would hold that when you have a distinction of lavim, then that's enough to make it a difference of chatois. So for example, let's say to use Rashi's example before about duplicating the Shemen HaMishcha and smearing the Shemen HaMishcha on one skin, the Torah mentions them as separate lavim. Don't duplicate it and don't smear any on your skin. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan would hold that's enough to make them two chatois. But when you have one lav, like over here, Altifno Ela Ovis Ve'ela Yidoni, without saying separately that there's a don't turn to Ovis, don't turn to Yidonim. And then you have by the Misa, it mentions them separately. Rabbi Yochanan holds that's not enough to make it a distinction as far as Chatos. Fine. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, my time alai omak Rish Lakish. Fine, but why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan? So it's fine. That's how Rabbi Yochanan would answer what Rish Lakish is saying. I chaluk in heim b'misa. Rabbi Yochanan would say that's not enough of a reason to say that they should be considered separate chatos. But we have to ask, more generally, why does Rabbi Yochanan not hold like Rish Lakish that Yidoni should be potter from chatos altogether? Doesn't he agree that you need a maisa in order to be chayav a chatos? And the answer is Amalach Masnis in Christus Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Yochanan says the Mishnah in Christus is according to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. The Amaloi in a Maisa, he says that in fact you don't need a Maisa in order to be Chayav Achatos, and we know that because one of the ones that's on the list in the Mishnah in Christus is Megadef, and we just talked about in the Gemara at the bottom of the previous Amud that according to Rabbi Akiva, Megadef means someone who curses Hashem. There's no Maisa involved. He's just talking, and nevertheless Rabbi Akiva is Mechayav Achatos if he did it. So we see that according to Rabbi Akiva, you don't need a maisa in order to be chayav achatos. So the Gemara asks, Rish Lakish, what would Rish Lakish answer to that? He says, Nihi delay boy Rabbi Akiva Maisa Rabba. Fine, Rabbi Akiva may not require a big Maisa to actually do something. It's enough according to Rabbi Akiva that he says something to make him Chayav Achatos. But Maisa Zuta Boy, even Rabbi Akiva, says Rish Lakish would require a small Maisa. Yudoni is not doing anything at all because before, of course, he does something, he puts the bone in his mouth. But afterwards, the bone itself, the bone talks by itself. And he's not doing anything. So therefore, how the Rambam would understand that is a whole other question. But in any case, according to Rish Lakish, according to the simple understanding that you'd only the bone actually itself speaks. So he did something, he did a preparation for it. But now, when it comes to the actual you'd only magic, he's not doing anything. He's just a passive conduit through which it's coming. As opposed to by Oiv, where, since the voice is coming out from under his arms, then as the Gemara is going to say, he moves his arms for that purpose. So that's what the Gemara says. First of all, we have to ask if according to Rabbi Akiva, you need at least some kind of Maisa. What kind of Maisa is there in Megadif in cursing Hashem according to Rabbi Akiva? And the answer is Akima Sfasav Havi Maisa. Moving his lips is considered a Maisa. This is it. This point, Akima Sfasav Havi Maisa, comes up, of course, in many other contexts as well. And among other things, it comes up, the Alter Rebbe brings it in Tanya in connection with the idea that mitzvahs in general require a physical action to do. And an example of that is we have a number of mitzvahs that involve speaking, like saying Krishna and davening and whatever. And that's fine because Akima Sfasav Havi Maisa in the positive sense. But by Yidoni, again, he's not even moving his lips. Okay, the Gemara says, Baal Oiv Mai Maiseik. Fine, what kind of action is there when he's doing Oiv? And the answer is, Hakosha Zroes of Havi Maise, moving and banging his arms, which is that's what causes the sound, the voice to come out from under his armpit. That itself is the Maise. So therefore, according to Rish Lakish, there is in fact each one of the things listed in the Septa Krisis involves a Maisa. In the case of Megadeth, it's speaking. In the case of Oiv, it's moving and flapping his arms. So therefore, he says a person reads Chayiv Chatas for those. But according to him, Yudoni, there's no Maisa at all when it comes to the actual Yudoni, and therefore he'd be potter from Chatas even if he did it by itself. Meanwhile, we said Rabbi Yechonon holds that all it is if he does Oiv separately, he'd be Chayiv Chatas. Yudoni separately, he'd be Chayiv Chatas, only if he does the both of them together as he bringing only one Chatas because there's only one lav that covers the two of them. Okay. So the Gemara continues, Vafilu Rabbanan. So you're telling me that according to Rish Lakish, even the Chachamim would hold that the banging his arms is considered a Maisa. Vahatanya, we learn in a Braisa, when it comes to a person who worships of a desire of a Shoigig, what is a person chayev if he worships of a desire of a shergig? Is only when there's a maise involved. One of the four avodas that we talked about earlier in our parak. And Rish Lakish points out, man tana ishtachava, which tana is it that says that he'd be chayev achatas for bowing to avodah zarah? That he's chayev, misa that we established earlier in the parak, but that he should be chayev achatas if he did it for shergig. Rish Lakish says only Rabbi Akiva holds that. Mantane Shachavah Rabbi Akiva, he drama loybein in Maisa, who says that you don't require a Maisa, that according to him it's enough a Maisa cotton. Now, Rish Lakish would hold that bowing is also considered a Maisa cotton. It's considered only a minor Maisa, and therefore only Rabbi Akiva would hold that he's Chayev Achatas for it. So it comes out, according to Rish Lakish's understanding, that the Chachamim would disagree with that. They would say that he's not Chayev Achatas for bowing to Avodah Zarah. So then what are you telling me that when it comes to banging his arms, that would be enough of a Maisa for the Chachamim to say that that's considered, that's considered a Maisa and for him to be Chayev Achatas for it? How is that? So that's the question. Rabbi Yochanan says, Afilu Tamer Rabbanan, that actually you could say that Mishnah goes even according to the Chachamim. Kfifas Kaimasa La Rabbanan Havi Maisa, because when it comes to bowing, he's bending down, and then even according to the Chachamim, that would be enough of a Maisa. Well, the Gemara asked, then what's the law? So fine, that explains according to Rabbi Yochanan. But the hashda l'Rish Lakish kfifas kemosay l'rabbanon l'have a ma'aser. So you're telling me that according to Rish Lakish bowing down, the fact that he bows his head and his body, according to Chachamim, is not considered enough of a ma'aser, and that's why he explains that that hishtachaba is chayav chatas only according to the Rakiva. Akoshas z'ra'osav d'val oiv havi ma'aser. How could he possibly hold that according to Chachamim, banging his arms, which is even lesser ma'aser, should be considered a ma'aser. So how can Rish Lakish say that that Baal Oiv would be chayav achatos? And it sounds like he's saying even according to the Chachamim, it comes out from what he's saying. Only Rabbi Akiva would be mechayav and achatos for it. So the Gemara says, fine, kikam Rish Lakish nami l'Rabbi Akiva. Fine, when Rish Lakish is saying that banging his arms and thereby causing the dead to speak with Oiv is only bechayav achatos only l'Rabbi Akiva. But according to the Chachamim, indeed, Rish Lakish would have to say that the Chachamim are not going to be mechayev and mechatas for that. Well, the question is, Yehochi, Yotze Megadif or Baal Oivim Boilei. Then in that case, then so it comes out now. So that Braisa that we said before. So that braisa that we said before, that the Chachamim are being mechayev only when there's a maisa, and the Chachamim said, therefore it includes Megadif, therefore it includes Rabbi Akiva's it excludes Rabbi Akiva's definition of Megadif, which means cursing Hashem, because according to them, that's not, they don't hold Akima Sfasiv, Havi Maisa. Well then, if we're saying that now, according to Rish Lakish, we're saying that that the Chachamim would necessarily have to say that bowing is not a ma'aser, and therefore, because he says that braisa that makes him chayav chatas for bowing is according specifically to Rabbi Akiva, and therefore it comes out that according to that, a person who does oiv wouldn't be chayav chatas according to the Chachamim either. So then the braisa should say yotz megadif uval oiv mibayilei. The braisa should say that the Chachamim of pattering him from Achatos in both cases, both Megadif and Baal Oiv. So the Braisa doesn't say that. It sounds like according to everybody, a person who does Oiv is Chayev. Now why? If the Chachamim are not going to be Chayev, according to Rish Lakish, even for bowing to Avodah Zarah, which is a much bigger Maisa, why would they be Chayev him for Oiv, which is a smaller Maisa? So the Gemara says, fine. Ella oma ula v'mekater l'shed. So Ula says, fine, but the reason why the person who does oiv is chayv achatos, even according to the Chachamim, is because would be where he's bringing a korban to a shed, which is in charge of that kind of thing. He's bringing a korban to the shed, that the shed should help him with this oiv magic. So therefore, that's for sure. Bringing a korban like that is for sure considered a ma'aser. As opposed to the bowing is less than, if it was just a stam, in other words, there's a difference between stam bal oiv. Oiv may involve bringing a korban, or it may not. Here, although saying when it involves bringing something in honor of the shed that's now going to help him out with his oiv magic, then that would be when the chacham machayed him. But it's true that if he were to just do oiv by itself without that and just do a kosher siro yosef, then the chacham would say that he's potter from a chatas and only the bakiv would be mechayev him. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rava. So Rava says to Ula, what's the, then in that case, the Katal Shed, over the Chachamim, who bring a korban to a shed is flat out Avodah Zarah. Then he's chayev already for Avodah Zarah. Then you don't need to mention separately the fact that he's doing it in order to enable his oiv. Ella Amalei Rava. So Rava says, rather fine. The case that you'd have to say, according to the Chachamim, according to Rish Lakish's understanding of the Chachamim, where he's chayev kores, and therefore he's chayev achatas, for doing it b'shogeg, would be mimakatal chavar. Where Lachaber, where he's bringing the korban, he's bruning something in order to gather the shadim together. So in order to accomplish the kishuf. So in other words, what Ula was saying, the mekato l'shed, means he's bruning something in honor of the shed in order that the shed should do what he wants. Now Rava is saying that actually it's not that he's doing it in order to make the shed feel good and do what he wants. He's not doing it. He's not considering the shed a god. But what he's doing is he's doing the korban in order to gather the shadim together, like this, so to speak. They'll all gather around the korban because they'll be attracted by it. And then once they're there, then he can have them do what he wants, which is the oiv magic. So that would be the case where the chacham are agreeing. That's definitely a ma'isa that would make him chayev kores or achatas. By the way, that was the goyish concept in those times, that you bring a korban, and you have a famous old Babylonian texts about this, for example, that has their version of the story of the Mabul, where it has that their version of Noach, whatever he's called, in their epic over there, that he brings a korban, and they just, the gods gather around it like flies. So like, people like they're attracted by the smell of the burning meat, and they all come running. So the same way over here, we're talking about that he's burning something in order to attract the Shadim to come. Omale Abayas. Abayas says that still doesn't work. That's a separate issue. Makata l'chaber. If he's burning a korban in order to gather the shadim together, choyver chovahu. Then that's a different issue. Where the Torah says among the list of kinds of magic that you can't do is choyver chover, which means gathering things together. Now that's not mitzvah. That's only a lav. So then how are you telling me that if a person were to do that, he would be chay of kores and he would be bringing a chatas? So the answer is ain. Yes, it is only choy v'chover, says Rava. Va'terda omra choy v'zebeskila. However, the Torah says this kind of choy v'chover you can have. There's a kind of choy v'chover where he's using it, as the Gemara is going to go on to say now, to gather different kinds of creatures, different kinds of dashmistic creatures together, such as, for example, snakes or scorpions or whatever. That kind would be a lab. But then you have the kind of a year where he's trying to gather the shadim together. That would be where he's, the Torah is saying he's chayiv skila when he does it b'mezid, and therefore he'd be chayiv kores if he does it without edim v'asra, and a chatas if he does it b'shreiting. So, but that's the answer. So, in other words, according to the Shlokish, that would be the scenario where the Chachamim are being mechayiv chatas for oiv, not when he just does the oiv by itself, where he's not bringing this korban, because the Chacham wouldn't consider flapping his arms and banging his arms to be enough of a maisa, according to the Shlokish's understanding of it. They don't even say that bowing is considered a maisa, enough to be mechayiv him. But they would say that if he brings this korban, if he brings this ketura, so whatever, in order to cause the shadim to gather, yes, usually we would categorize that as choy v'chover, but he would be the kind of choy v'chover that actually gets a missa, and therefore that could get him kores to a chatas. Well, having talked about choy v'chover, let's talk about that concept a little bit. Tananabanan, choy v'chover, when the Torah says, now the word chover literally means to gather, to join together. So choy v'chover is a type of magic that involves joining different things together. So echad chover gadol, whether we're talking about kishuf that's used to gather together large animals, the lions or whatever, the echad chover katan, or whether he's doing it to gather together little animals with kishuf, snakes and things like that, even if he's using the choy v'chover magic to gather together snakes and scorpions, where the point is that either Rashi says he wants to do that in order that this way they'll fight with each other. This way, instead of bothering him and other people around, this way they'll fight each other because snakes and scorpions are natural enemies. Or Rashi says another possibility, he wants to use the choy v'chover magic in order to cause them to gather in the desert or someplace far away from people so they won't harm people. So even though he's doing it for those kinds of purposes, would still be osur. So again, since it's not burning tortoise in order to attract shadim, he's not chayiv misa for it, but nevertheless it would be allowed. Amar Abayas, Abayas says in this connection, Hilkach, therefore, we can learn from this, Haimad, Somid, Ziburava Akrava, if a person uses Kishuf to gather together a hornet and a scorpion, two dangerous stinging creatures, Afagav to Komikavin, the Lloyd Lizku, even though his only Kavana is that they shouldn't harm him, because these are both dangerous creatures that could sting people and kill them, nevertheless, also, it's still also for him to do it. Now, Rashi points out, if they're chasing after him, then that's different, because then there's Pekuach Nefesh, and Pekuach Nefesh is doicha most things in the Torah, as we're going to learn later on in our Masechta. But here we're talking about where there's no sakona involved. Now, there are Rishonim who point out that, wait a minute, then what's the Chiddush? Of course, if it's a Makam Sakana, then of course it's Mutter, and if not, So the Gemara in Christos actually mentions this point as well. In fact, what Rashi is saying over here, that if they're chasing him, then it's Mutter. So Rashi says over here, because Pekuach Nefesh, the Gemara there actually makes that point. And Tosfos there in Christos points out, well, wait a minute, then what's the Chiddush? Of course, Makam Sakana, it would be Mutter. So in fact, there's an answer, the Shevet HaLevi, in fact, gives an answer that when we're, in fact, there is, it is mutter to do kishuf when you have, when it's something that's known to work for refuah. So therefore, in a similar way, the Gemara tells us in Masechet Shabbos that when you have something that's known to work as a refuah, then it's not considered Dauke HaMerdi, it's not considered the superstitious ways of the Goyim, and therefore you're allowed to do it. So to say, there are Rishonim who learn that in the same way, you would even be able to do actual kishuf in order to save a person's life for refuah, and therefore that's the point that Choy V'Chover is in the same category, and he would be allowed to do it in order to save his life or somebody else's life, namely where the hornet or the scorpion or whatever are chasing him with intent to sting. The Gemara continues. Okay, so far we've answered Rish Lakish. We've explained how Rish Lakish would understand the opinions of Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, respectively, about when he's Chayiv Chatos and when not. Let's get back to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, Maishno, the Kfifas Kemosu, the Rabbanan Havi Maisa. Why is it according to him that bending down to worship, to bow in front of the Avodah Zarah would be considered a Maisa, according to the Chachamim, to the extent that he would be Chayiv Chatos for it? Because unlike Rish Lakish, who said before that the Braisa that mentioned Ishtachava as being Chayiv Chatos, is only according to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yochanan holds it's according to the Chachamim as well. So why according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of the Chachamim would that be considered a Maisa? Vakimas Sfas of Loi having Maisa, whereas according to the Chachamim moving his lips and cursing Hashem is not considered a Maisa. Rabbi Yochanan, in other words, is not drawing a distinction like Rish Lakish did between a big Maisa and a small Maisa. According to the Chachamim, any case where there's a Maisa, he'd be Chayim. So why are they exempting Megadif? And the answer is Amar Rav Shani Megadif Hayov Yeshne Belev. The difference is that Megadif involves the main chiyuv is that he has the intention to speak out and to curse Hashem. So now let's say, for example, if he had been using the name of Hashem, the name Yudke Vovke, like we talked before, but let's say he didn't know that it refers to Hashem. There's something else that he's used the name Hashem for, and he's cursing that. He wouldn't be chayev for that. So in other words, it's not just the speaking; it's also the thinking. Now Tosfos points out Ishtachava also involves a thought in the heart, because we said before that we learned a few dasam ago about Me'avo Me'ira, and we talked about you can have a case where a person is bowing to a statue of a king, and unless he intends to accept the king as his god, he's not chayev for anything. So Tosfos brings that actually we find the Sancheirev, the Pasuk speaks, the Pasuk refers to, we talked about a few days ago when Rav Shakeh came with the whole message from Sancheirev and is blaspheming and reviling Hashem and saying that what makes you think Hashem is going to save you, he doesn't have any power more than any of the other Getchkas, etc., etc. And the Pasuk calls him Choshev al Hashem Ra, the one who thought badly about Hashem. So we see that Megadif, more than anything else, depends on Machshava. Then Tosfos also refers to the fact, now in that sugya of Av V'Yira, Tosfos had pointed out that the heter of Av V'Yira would only be when it's not an established Avodah Zarah. Here it's an established Avodah Zarah, so then it doesn't really matter so much what his intentions are, as opposed to Megadif, it really matters what his actual intentions are. In fact, the Ran and the make an interesting point, actually, that if the Beis Din can't punish a person based in his machshavas, so they can't possibly know what he was thinking, but if they knew, they would actually execute him maybe only for machshava, because by Avodah Zarah, machshava, Kodesh Baruch Hu, Metzar V'Lamaisa. But because they can't know, then therefore they can't unless he actually speaks it out. But primarily it depends on what he's thinking in his heart. All right, the Gemara says, Mosiv Rav Zeira. So Rav Zeira says then, so you're telling me that in Megadif, there is, again, according to Rava's explanation, then we're saying Megadif is not exclusively just moving his lips. It also depends on Machshavas HaLev. It also depends what he's thinking in his heart, and therefore the Chacham say he's not chayev for that. But what about the Braisa over there says, as far as when is a person chayev chatos, yotzu edim zimmerman, we have to exclude edim zimmerman, they're not chayev chatos, she'en behen maisa, because there's no maisa, because they're only speaking. Now, v'amai, halasnu v'alev. Now, why? When it comes to edos, it doesn't matter what they're thinking, all it means is, all it is that they're speaking. There it doesn't matter kavanas alev or not, as long as they're saying they're eidos then and being chayev and misa or malchus or what have you, then they're chayev as well.
So you see that it doesn't matter whether there's kavanas alev or not. Tosfos points out that listen, I mean, you don't even need hasra for edim zomim. So what makes us think anyway? Why do we even need a pasuk to tell us they're potter from a chatas? Why would we think they'd be chayav a chatas? The fact is that we see that they can be killed for even doing their thing b'shoging. They don't need hasra. But Tosfos says, let's say, for example, we know that they were made, let's say they were shown to be Edom Zomim before the Gemar Din. So they're not going to be Chayav Misa at this point, because only after Gemar Din, before the person is executed, are they Chayav Misa, but never, so we would have thought maybe at that point they should be bringing a Korban. Another point is that maybe, let's say, if they themselves said we were lying, so we can't necessarily undo their Edos, but nevertheless, maybe they should be Chayav a Korban. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav, Shiny Edom Zomim, Horeb Yeshne Bekoil. The difference is that with Edom Zomim, their chiyuv is only because of the voice, is only because the dayanim hear their voice, and they're mechayavim based on that, and the voice is not something substantial. It's ein by mamash. There's no mamashus in his voice. So in that sense, it's similar to Megadif, where it only depends on his thought. It's going to be a question rather. So therefore, Rava says, so the Edom Zomim, we can't be mechayev in them on the basis of Kurl because the Dayanim hear their voice. Now, an interesting point is the Ran doesn't like that explanation, because then how is it any different than Megadif? Their voice also has to be heard. So first of all, Tosfos has a different view. So is to be here, but anyway, the Ran gives an interesting explanation. It's possible for them to give Eidos without actually moving their lips. There's four letters in the Aleph Beis, Beis, Mav, Vav, Mem, and Pei, that require the lips, but the other letters of the Aleph Beis do not, so therefore you can't consider it a Maisa. The fact that he makes motions with his tongue or whatever inside his mouth wouldn't be considered a Maisa. So it's possible for them to say Eidos without having any of those four letters in what they're saying. So the Gemara asks the koil of Rabbi Yochanan lav ma'isahu. You're telling me according to Rabbi Yochanan something that involves just him doing something with his voice is not considered a ma'isa. V'ha'itmar, we have a discussion when we have in Bava Metzia the whole concept of like sachsim shor b'dishoy, that you're not allowed to muzzle an ox or any other animal while it's doing farm work for you, while it's threshing the grain. So we talk about it there in the Gemara. Chosma b'koil. What about if he muzzled the animal with his voice? The animal started eating and he yelled at it, so it stopped eating. Or another example where we have the Torah tells us you can't hitch up two different types of animals to a plow or a wagon or whatever. That would be the issue of kilayim. And so what happens? The inega b'kol. What happens if he made the animals move with his voice? So he hitched them up to the wagon, and then he yelled at them and they started moving and pulling the wagon. Would he be chayev? Rabbi Yochanan Amar chayev. V'resh Lakish Amar Potter. Rabbi Yochanan says he'd be chayev Malkus for either of those. V'resh Lakish says he's Potter. Rabbi Yochanan Amar chayev Akimas Pivu Havi Maisa. Rabbi Yochanan holds that moving his lips is considered a Maisa. V'resh Lakish Amar Potter Akimas Pivu Lo Havi Maisa. And V'resh Lakish holds that moving his lips is not considered a Maisa. So therefore he'd be Potter from Malkus. So we talked about on Amud Aleph what kind of maisa you need in order to be chayev kores or achatas or whatever. But in any case, the point is we're saying over here that Rish Lakish holds that that's not enough to be considered, that that's not considered to be enough of a maisa. Tosfos points out that the Rish Lakish himself holds that a person could get malchus even for a lav shein b'maisa, but he's talking about over here according to the opinion that you don't get malchus for a lav shein b'maisa, which we touched on the other day in the Gemara. Anyway, the point is we see from that Rabbi Yochanan holds that his voice is enough to be mechayev. So rather, Rava says the difference is that with Edom Zomim, the main chiyuv is that they're saying that they saw something. The seeing is not a maisa, and therefore you can't really say that there's a maisa involved, even though later on they come and say it in Beis Din, but nevertheless the main chiyuv comes from what they claim that they saw. Now the Rif has a gusa over here, not biriya, but rather biiya. Meaning that it's possible for a person to become an Eid Zomim just by saying ia, which is a word that means yes. In fact, in Arabic, that's one of the ways of saying yes is a word like ee or I or something like that. So therefore, and the point is, again, there's no moving lips involved. So the Ran, based on that, explains, when we said before, yeshne b'kol, the Ran explains that yeshne b'kol meant the same kind of thing. That's, in other words, first we said that they don't need to use a bays or vav or mem or pay, and therefore they don't need to move their lips. Now we're saying that the difference is that here you don't even need, not only he doesn't need to move his lips, he doesn't need to move anything in his mouth. Really, all he needs is to say ear or something like that, which doesn't involve moving his tongue or anything like that. All it involves is something from his throat. So when Rabbi Yechon, according to that, when Rabbi Yechon is saying that if he uses his voice to be choice in the animal, to muzzle the animal or to cause it to move, would mean that he's using other letters of the aleph bays in that. But when it comes to Edom, it's possible to do it only with this kind of statement, like ia, yes, meaning in other words, yes, I saw this, and therefore that would be enough to be mechayev him, and therefore. So therefore, that is the reason that why Adam Zimmin are potter from a korban. If it weren't for that, then yes, they would be chayev. But when it comes to Megadeth, where it actually involves saying things that use other parts of his mouth, then there's considered enough of a maisa. So Rava says that on the other hand, there yeshne belev, it also requires that he's thinking about it in his mind and having in mind to do this, and therefore we can say that according to the Chachamim, he'd be potter from a chatos for that. Okay. fine. So that covers the whole machlokas of Rav Yechon and Rish Lakish. So the bottom line is there's a machlokas between them whether a person is chayev achatas for doing yidoni, where there's not much of a maisa. And in the course of that, we talked about the different other cases when according to Rabbi Akiva versus according to the Chachamim, a person would be chayev achatas for doing any of these various things. Let's get back to the actual oiv and yidoni. Tonan abanon, we learn the brayse. A bal oiv is avadara ben aprokim. A bal oiv is where he causes the nes, where he causes the spirit of the nes to speak from between his joints. So like the spirit of the nes comes and sits on one of his joints, and then it speaks from over there. So Rashi describes it could be, for example, on his finger joints or on his knee joints or whatever. Umi ben atsila yadav, or from under his armpit. Yidoni, and the definition of which, as we said on Aleph, that involves that he's moving those body parts. Akasha Zeroyesa, for example, moving and then banging his arms to make the sound. Yidoni, Zamaniach Etzim, Yadua Befiv, Yidoni is where he puts a bone of a creature called Yadua in his mouth, and the bone speaks on its own, which we talked about before, what the possible definitions of the Yadua is. So the Gemara says, Mesi, I have a contradiction to that. You're telling me that the Oiv involves his joints. But you have a pasuk, v'hoya ka'oiv me'eretz koylech. The Navi is telling the Jewish people how there's going to come a point during Golus when you're going to be very low, very lowly, and your voice will be like oiv from the ground. So it was like a very faint voice that comes from the ground. My lav de mishtoi kiyochei. Doesn't that mean, in other words, that the Nes's voice is heard normally from the grave? So therefore, so we see, in other words, it doesn't involve joints or anything like that. And the answer is like, no, the solik v'yasa ben aprokim. It comes up, and it comes up and it sits on the joints. But because it's a Nes and he doesn't have any chayus anymore, therefore the voice is very low and faint. But it does, and then it speaks, but it speaks in a very low voice. So the pasuk, in other words, when it says, v'hoya ka'oiv me'eretz koylech, means your voice will be low, like when the oiv comes up from the ground and sits on the baal oiv's joints and speaks. The Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof. You have the story of Shaul consulting with the baalas oiv, the story of Shaul and the witch. And the pasuk says, "Vatomer Ishal Shol." The woman says to Shol, "Elikim Reisi Olam Mina Oretz." I saw Elikim, which at the beginning of the Masechta we talk about Elikim means very distinguished Dayanim, which is referring over here to Shmuel. So I saw Elikim coming up from the ground. So again, my love to Mishroiki Urchi, doesn't she mean that the Nes that Shmuel in this case is speaking from where he came up from the ground? And the answer is again, "Loi Di Yosi Ben Aprokim Mishroi." No, again, it means that the Nes sits on the joints and speaks. So here, she's doing her oiv magic, and she's causing the spirit of Shmuel to settle on one of her joints, and it speaks in a low voice from there. So, there are, by the way, Mephoshim, aside from the whole general machlokas that we were talking about before, where the Rambam holds that all these kinds of magic are really just sleight of hand and trickery and whatever, and there's no actual validity to any of them, there are also a number of the Mephoshim on the Pesukim over there in Shmuel that explain that basically the woman, the Balasoy, faked the whole thing and she didn't actually have the power to bring the Neshama of Shmuel, the Tzaddik, down. On the other hand, here in other places, the Gemara seems to take it as a given that she actually was able to. There's Gemara and Chagiga about it. There's Or Gemara. There's others. Okay, the Gemara continues. Tana Rabbanan. Baal Oiv. How does a Baal Oiv work? Echad Amalav is Churoi. There can be that he brings up the spirit to rest on zchuray, on the male organ, on the male organ. That can mean his own male organ, or it can mean of the mess. So in other words, it can be. So Rashi just says that it means malo b'schura. It means Rashi just says that malo Moshe was a mess al zachrusay, that he makes the mess sit on his zachrus. The Oruch HaNer explains that Rashi means that he has things pointed in such a way that his joints are facing towards the zachrus, towards the male organ of the mess. Tosfos actually says that how would that work by Shol? She was a woman. So rather it means, in other words, that the zachrusay doesn't mean his male organ. It just means it's a type of kishuv. Zchura is just another name for the technique of Oiv. The Echad Anishav Gugoylos, or whether he consults the Oiv using a skull, that he uses Kishuv to make the skull talk. Ma Ben Zelazeh, what's the difference between using Zachrusay versus using the skull? The difference is Malab is Zchura, Eina Oila Kadarkoi. When he uses Zechuroi, however, Rashi and Tosfos define it respectively, Eina Ola Kedarkoi, the mess, the spirit of the mess, does not come up in its normal way, it comes upside down. The Eina Ola B'Shabbos, and also, you can't bring him up on Shabbos. In fact, the Gemara elsewhere explains that that's why. Now, the Psukim in Shmuel, when it tells over there about the story of Shol and the Baal HaSoiv, it says she was very frightened. And this Shol had come there in disguise. He didn't tell her that he was King Shol because she was nervous. Shol had previously done what the Torah says and gotten rid of all the Baal HaSoiv and Yidoni from Eretz Yisrael and killed them or forced them to leave or whatever. So now she's nervous that Shol's going to find out what I'm doing. So Shol tells her, don't worry, you won't, and he pretends like he's not Shol. Then, though, when she sees Shmuel coming up, the prophet says she screamed and she said, wait, you're Shol. How does she know? The Gemara elsewhere explains, because based on this Gemara over here, that normally the mess comes upside down, but here, out of respect for Shol, it came right side up. So therefore she realized, out of respect for Shol, the king, so therefore she realized he must be the king. But so we see she was using the Schurai method, so normally he would come upside down. And in this case, only because of out of honor for Shol did he come right side up. But also, it wouldn't work on Shabbos, that Nishab or Gugolos, on the other hand, if he uses a skull and makes the skull speak, Oila Kadarka, then it causes the mess to come up in the normal direction, head first, the Oila B'Shabbos, and such a thing can be accomplished on Shabbos as well. The Gemara says, what do you mean, Oila? What do you mean, comes up? Lahecha Solik, where does he come up? Hakamei Manach, what do you mean? The mess is right in front of him. I mean, the skull is right there. Rather, what it means is that it's not oile, it comes up, but oine, it speaks, kedarkoi, normally, meaning the skull itself speaks, rather than having to sit on his joints, and such a thing can be accomplished on Shabbos as well. Okay, so we're saying that normal oiv magic cannot be done on Shabbos. So the Gemara brings in this connection. V'af shei lazu, sholot shol tunas rufus harosha, esrebakiva. We find that Turnus Rufus HaRosha, the Roman governor of Eretz Yisrael at that time, was asked Rabbi Akiva this. This is we have in different midrashim. You have different questions that Turnus Rufus asked Rabbi Akiva, and then this is one of them. By the way, you have also Turnus Rufus was the Roman governor who eventually oversaw the execution of Rabbi Akiva, and also we have a Turnus Rufus where it says that he died and Rabbi Akiva married his Amona. That his Amona had come to seduce Rabbi Akiva. Story in the Sefer Nedarim. We're going to get to it soon in Ein Yaakov. And then eventually after her husband died, she did tshuva and became a Giyotis, and Rabbi Akiva ended up marrying her. Anyway, so evidently there are two different Turnus Rufuses. So the one who's asking over here might be the original one, or it might be later on his successor who had the same name and is the one who ended up overseeing Rabbi Akiva's execution.
Anyway, so he's asking Rabbi Akiva. Omaloi asks him, what's special about this day of Shabbos from every other day? You Jews say that Shabbos is a special day. Who says it's anything more special than any other day? Marshall says, really, there's three questions he's asking. Well, actually, we'll get to the three questions in a moment. So he asks him, what's different of this day than any other day? Omaloi, so Rabbi Akiva answers him, answering a question with a question, as Jews often do. By the way, so I should mention, by the way, I forgot to mention, as far as why with the skull it can happen on Shabbos and it comes up normally, the Oruch HaNer explains because the whole ability of being able to summon the mess, the Gemara explains in that Gemara in Chagiga about Shaul and the witch, because the mess figures he's being summoned to the Beis Din Shamayla. So on Shabbos, normally he knows there's no din, so he's not being called to the Beis Din Shamayla. But when the actual skull is there of the mess, then he has no choice but to answer on Shabbos as well. Okay, so anyway, Saturnus Rufus asks Rabbi Akiva, what's different about Shabbos than any other day? Omaloi, so Rabbi Akiva answers him with a question, Umagvarmi Gurin, how are you as person different than every other person? Omaloi, Saturnus Rufus says, Demori Tzvi, the emperor decided to appoint me to this position. That's what makes me important. So Rabbi Akiva tells him, Shabbos Nami, Demori Tzvi, well, the same thing, Shabbos. The master of the world decided that this day should be special. Omaloi, Saturnus Rufus says, fine, I understand that. I understand that Shabbos would be special because Hashem designated it as such. But the question is, Hachi Kaminoloch, mi yemedah idna Shabbos? Who said that today is Shabbos? Shabbos is after all one out of every 7 days. Maybe you got the days mixed up, and maybe really today is a different day of the week. Which means Marashah is saying he's really including in that three questions. First of all, how do you know that Hashem did in fact rest on that day? Number two, how do you know that that this is a day that He commanded you to rest on? And how do you know that you haven't gotten the days mixed? And how do you know that so all of it is, how do you know you didn't get mixed up the days, but how do you know that Hashem rested on it, that He told you to rest on it, and that it's Shabbos as far as Menucha L'chayei Ha'olamim? So Rabbi Akiva tells him, I'll give you three, and you're asking, in effect, three questions, I'll give you three proofs. Sabbatyon Yechiyach, first of all, you can see the Nahar Sabbatyon, otherwise known as Sambatyon, where it throws up rocks and dirt all week long, but on Shabbos it rests. So Rashi describes it's a river full of stones, and the whole week long it's flowing very strongly, and on Shabbos it's quiet and rests. So you can see that. But in the Medrash, also has this dialogue between Turnus Rufus and Rabbi Akiva, and Turnus Rufus says, that's very nice, but Nahar Sambatyon is far away from here. You want me to schlep all the way there to prove it? So instead, Rabbi Akiva tells him, fine, I'll give you some other proofs. Baal Oiv Yechiyach, you can also prove it from Baal Oiv, which that Oiv magic, as we just said, doesn't work on Shabbos unless you have the actual skull there. And Kivrei Shel Avim Yechiyach, you can also prove it from your own father's grave, he says to Turnus Rufus, She'en Mala Oshin B'Shabbos, you'll see that there's smoke coming from it all week long because he's being punished in the fires of Gehenna, but on Shabbos the smoke goes away. On Shabbos, the smoke stops because Gehenna is closed on Shabbos. So again, the idea is Turnus Rufus is challenging him in three ways. So he tells him, Nahar Sambatyon Yechiyach, that you see that ever since Hashem created the world, it rests every Shabbos. Why? Because Hashem himself rested. The Baal Oiv shows that you can't do Melacha now either, just like the Baal Oiv can't do his job on Shabbos, the same way Hashem wants us to rest on Shabbos. And from your father's grave, you see that in Olam Haba, they rest in this day, that you see that your father also has rest from his tortures in Gehenna on Shabbos. Omaloi, Saturnus Rufus, was very offended by that last one, that he's saying that his father is suffering in Gehenna. Omaloi, he tells him, Biziste biyashte vikilautoi. Look at that, you've mocked him, you've mocked him, you've embarrassed him, and you've cursed him. A triple expression corresponding to the three things that Rabbi Akiva had told him. Okay. Fine. So now in this connection, we were talking about Baal Oiv, so we're talking about it involves consulting the dead. So we want to ask, now there's a different one, the Pasuk says. The Pasuk also mentions Dorda Shalamesim. So Shoyal Oiv, Hainu V'Dorda Shalamesim. Isn't Shoyal Oiv and Dorda Shalamesim the same thing? Why is the Torah listing them differently? And Oiv is Chayiv Skila, and Dorda Shalamesim would be only a lav. The answer is Dorda Shalamesim is something else. Kedetanya, V'Dorda Shalamesim, Zeham Mariv Atzmoi,
That refers to somebody who starves himself, who fasts, v'holich v'londo v'esakmaris, and he goes and stays overnight in a cemetery, kadesh teach all of ruach tumah, so that a spirit of tumah, the spirit of the mesim, should rest on him and should tell him things. Rashi explains, I mean, specifically, he wants that the shed of the Beis HaKvaris will rest on him and help him and be friendly to him and help him with his kishuf in the future. So it's not the actual kishuf itself, it's kind of like a preparation for it by getting the shed to be on his side. By the way, it's for this reason that we have the minhag when we go to the oil. We don't eat beforehand out of respect for the mess, but we do drink something in order that we're not fasting, in order that we don't have this issue of Dirdash HaMesim. Mind you, the Zohar, by the way, anyway, talks about, we say we have it in the minor Lashon, we have a passage from the Zohar where one of the Chachamim asks, Rav Yossi, I think, how is it we're not being over on Dirdash HaMesim when we go to Kibbutz Tzaddikim? And the answer, and the gist of the answer is that the Tzaddikim are not Mesim. And Mesim in this connection refers to Rishoyim, Chayim, Kruyim, Mesim, and then after they're physically dead, they're for sure dead, as opposed to the Tzaddikim are always alive. So this whole thing, by the way, gets into the whole matter of spiritualism and seances and Ouija boards and all those kinds of things that people try to do in order to communicate with the dead. We're saying over here that this is not, that you're not allowed to do that. So the Gemara points out, when Rabbi Akiva would reach this pasuk about Dirdash HaMesim and consider what Dirdash HaMesim involves, that we said it involves fasting and going and staying in a Beis HaKvaris, so the shed will rest on him, Rabbi Akiva would cry, and he would say, then we can learn a Kavachoyim, Madach, a person who starves himself and makes himself hungry in order that a Ruach Tumah should rest on him, it works, Shoda Olav, Ruach Tumah. Sure enough, a spirit of Tumah, a spirit of that shed, rests on him. Hamariv atzmei kadesh tishol of ruach tara. That if a person were to starve himself and fast in order that a spirit of tara of nevuah should come on him, alachas kama v'kama. How much more so that it ought to work? He ought to be able to be able to achieve nevuah that way. Unfortunately, it doesn't work. Avol ma'aseh, but what can we do? Shaman etzenu, gor mulanu. Our avedus have caused that it doesn't work, that the shchina, that ruach hakodesh and nevuah doesn't rest on us. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ki imam neseichem hoyim avdilim meinechem levein alakechem. As the pasuk says, it's only your avedus that are separating you between you and Hashem. If it weren't for the avoinus, there wouldn't be havdalah, there wouldn't be any separation between a yid and the eivishter. And it would be possible for a person to bring on himself Ruach HaKodesh with this kind of thing of fasting and doing Maisim like that. Marsha explains, in other words, the vort is that everything a person does creates a ruchniistic thing. We even have in Pirkei Avos that a person does a mitzvah, kernel et prak l'dachot, and of course in Kabbalah and in Chassidus, it expands on that point a lot more about how a person creates realities of kedusha in the world by what he does for good, and then realities the other way around when he does the opposite. So now the result is the malochim and the kochas atumah that are created by his avodas prevent him from being blocked, the ruach hakodesh from reaching him. But if it weren't for that, then it would in fact be possible to have Ruach HaKodesh and to accomplish great things, as the Gemara is going to go on to say now. Omar Rava, Ibo Tzadiki Boru Alma. Rava says in this connection, if the Tzadikim wanted, they could create a whole world. They don't have Averis, so therefore they would have the ability, the Eivishter would give them the ability that they would be able to, create a whole world. And then Shenema, the same pasuk, Kiyavaneseichem Hoyim Avdilim, Megami Yuaveiras, are separating you from Hashem, but if not for that, you would actually have that ability. So the Gemara gives an example. Rova Bora Gavra. Rova himself created a man, he created a Golem. You have many cases, many times in Jewish history when famous tzaddikim created Golomim. So this is the first example that we know of. Shadre, the Kamedia Rav Zera, and he sent this person to Rav Zera. Have a komishtoi bade. Rav Zera is talking with the person. Velo have a komahadule, but the person was not answering him, because as much as Rava has the ability to create him, he doesn't have the ability to give him the power of speech. We find similarly by the Maharal's Golem. There's other examples like that where the tzaddik has the ability to create a person with sefer yitzira and other shemus of the Eidishter and things, but not to give it the power of speech. Amalei, so Rav Zera realizes that it's a golem. Min chavrayat, obviously you were created by one of my chaverim. Todol afrach, go back to your dust. There's no real reason for you to exist. You don't need to. Rashi actually explains, hanivroim aideh chaverim ata. We can also read it, hachavorim, that you were created by the kishuf machers, but the mainstream explanation is it means that he's saying you were created by one of my colleagues. Similarly, the Gemara says, Rav Chanina and Rav Oshia have a yasvi called Mali Shabsa. Rav Chanina and Rav Oshia, every Erev Shabbos, would sit, va'aski b'sefer Yetzirah, and they would delve into Sefer Yetzirah. And with the koichas of Kedusha, from that, mivri lehu egla tilsa, they would create with that an egla tilsa, a good quality calf, which Rashi has several explanations all over Shas. We have the expression egla tilsa. So Rashi says it means that it was created new, but as if it was already one third of its age, which is the best quality, or that it was tasty as though it was the third one born. There's a couple of different explanations what egla tilsa means, but in any case, it means a high quality calf. But achli lehem, they would eat it l'kavod Shabbos. So this is another example where tzaddikim have the ability to create things using koichos of kedusha.